Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to Republic City.
Who do you think you are?
Got an idea about who I am now, chumps? See, I'm the Avatar. I'm Korra, your new Avatar.
I'm the Avatar! You gotta deal with it!
You've grown into quite the young Avatar.
And I think you're going to be a great Avatar.
Republic City needs its Avatar once again.
I'm saving you for last.
It's time to begin your airbending training.
I have to find my own path as the Avatar.
Unhand me, strange woman!
I caught the bad guys for you, officers.
I've been dying to ask you, what happened to Zuko's mom?
Will she be?
Mommy, look! I'm a Snowbender!
The revolution has begun!
I can't wait to get started. Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar the Last Airbender and Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Sam.
Yes, you are.
Mel.
Hey.
Allie.
Hello.
And Mina.
Hi, I'm new.
This is Mina's first podcast, but he's been part of the DF group for a while, and this is Mel and Allie's first one in a little bit. Today we'll be obviously be discussing the first episode of The Legend of Korra. Just got released from Coronation, and it's, I mean, pretty awesome. We will give you our thoughts on it, discuss parts of the episode, discuss what's coming next. You can email us at Dylan@DongBuFang.net, or if you want to email me, Jake, and Jeff, you can email webmaster@DongBuFang.net.
Do we even get any emails?
We get emails. Ooh, I probably should read some today.
Yeah, probably.
Yes, all the emails. I didn't work that into the outline.
Ooh, yeah. Okay, we'll see if I can figure that out in the middle of the podcast. but yeah. So I guess we should get right in, we could get to news first.
I guess the main news is that the episodes are out.
And life is good once more after 4 years of...
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, major Avatar withdrawal.
It has been a while.
It was worse than the break between seasons 2 and 3.
Yeah, 4 years.
Yeah, that's true. The break between season 2 and 3 is pretty brutal, though, because that was a cliffhanger, kind of.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, in terms of news, there's just a lot of new stuff. Release date, April 14th. I guess we can discuss that for a minute. What do you guys think of Korra airing at 11 a.m. on Saturdays?
It's stupid.
Okay.
I like it.
I mean, I understand what they're doing. You know, it's been 4 years, and the best way to get, you know, children's attention is to play it. Because it is aimed towards kids, but, you know, to play it in the block early morning Saturday when a lot of kids are watching Saturday morning cartoons. So I see it, you know, I understand it as a good starting point for a time slot. I hope it doesn't remain its time slot, but I'm okay with it for now. I just need to remember to get up at 11 on Saturday.
Yeah, problem for some of our audience, yeah, getting up.
Yeah, getting up in the morning.
Yeah, I party too hard at night. I mean, you know, I can't get up at 11 on Saturday.
It's not why I would need to accomplish.
Yeah, Sally.
Mel said, you said that, like, it's aimed towards kids. I thought it was aimed towards, like, more of a, like, our age kind of audience.
Yeah, that's the thought. That's the thing, though, is that Nick's general audience is kids, but we kept hearing that Korra was more mature audiences. So the question is, does it really make sense to air a, quote-unquote, more mature show at 11 a.m. as part of the Saturday morning cartoons time block?
Yeah, that's my thing. That's Go ahead.
I will say this, though, like, without getting into too much detail before our discussion, that, like, you know, some of the things in the episode, like, some political aspects, I do think are going to go right over kids' heads. You know, the younger kids who are watching cartoons at 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, I agree. But at the same time, there's some of those things in Avatar, but it's okay if it's, like, because it still remains a kid's show, even if it has some of the older things in it, which...
Genocide...
Yes, things like that. I guess now is a good time to mention that if you haven't seen the episode yet, because it hasn't exactly aired on TV yet, don't listen to our episode discussion. I'll tell you when we start.
Spoilers abound.
Yeah. And yeah, so my thoughts on this are, I don't really, so Nick is probably putting it at 11 a.m. because it's an established time block for kids' channels, and they, you know, they'll get a lot of viewers then on Saturday mornings. But Korra is coming in with a large audience already. I think sometimes we may overestimate how many, like, Avatar fans there are online, but there's still a lot, and it's gonna get a couple million guaranteed on its premiere. So why can't they just put in the normal Friday at 8 time block? They're already doing a lot of online promotion for the show, which is, it's probably new for Nick completely, and they're doing pretty well. They've messed up a couple times with some things, but it's new for them, and they're trying to get the mature audience correctly, the teenagers and older kids, so I guess I don't understand why this would, why this might, like, alienate some of those fans if it's at 11 a.m., or it might encourage them to watch it online after the show. I guess that's my only thing. But
well, I don't think it'll alienate, because I think they're kind of putting a risk with, you know, Coronation, all those things, that they know that a lot of the mature online viewership of, like, the original Avatar are going to come back no matter what time, and they're really trying to get the new viewers in. And also, there's probably something already at 8 p.m. that they're advertising. I wouldn't know what that is, Fridays. But
they do have a lot of new shows out this spring that I'm sure one of them, at least, is taking up the old time slot.
Yeah. And, I mean, that is the thought process, though, that probably that the loyal fans will watch no matter what time it's on. And I think that is somewhat of a misguided assumption, because the episode's going to find its way online very quickly. And people will not... I know there will be people that won't watch at 11 a.m. and just watch it when it's online.
Well, to be honest, that's probably going to end up being someone like me, just because...
Or, yeah, ditto.
People not in the United States, too.
Yeah, I mean, oh, yeah, and one thing, this is kind of backtracking slightly, that I find interesting, you said there was a lot of web promotion, like, that kind of contradicts the time slot, because, you know, the 12 and younger kids who are watching it on Saturday mornings are not going to be into this, you know, Coronation
right.
thing on the internet. It's more the older fans who are fans of the first show, so... I mean, again, like you said, they're assuming that most of the fans, the core fan base, will watch no matter what time. So that's why they're doing that, but...
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It's somewhat of a risky move, I'd say, for Nick, even though it's, like, the safest time block to air it in. But yeah. You could get that many viewers for other shows, too, so why not put the one with more loyal viewers at a more risky time slot, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's got a track record as well, instead of the newer shows, so...
Yeah. Oh, and if anyone doesn't know what Coronation or any of these things are, you can look at all the latest news at dongbufeng.net and look at what we're talking about. We can't go through all the new news today, or because there's just been so much since the last podcast. But basically, Coronation's Nick's online marketing, and it's like a website that has been showing new post every day and trying to get people to promote it. And I mean, it's working. There have been people who've been very adamant about getting new people onto the Coronation, getting the prizes they've been offering. Pretty good idea, working well.
Yeah,
so
starting
far.
Off with the sweepstakes was a great idea, because it got the fan base kind of established in Coronation, and then they managed to implement it really well, I think.
Yeah, definitely, and it was for a low point value, so like you didn't even need to get that many people to sign up, just a couple and share some posts, and then you're already entered in the sweepstakes, which everyone wants
to
enter.
I think about like 5 of my friends came at me with like, join this so I can win this and do that, and I was like, what is Coronation? Why am I being bombarded with this Coronation? So it worked out well.
Yeah, and it's been good. And now we get to look forward to Korra airing. It seems like every week we get 12 episode book one and 2 episodes on April 14th, and then we'll go from there. We'll see if Nick airs them all consecutively. I somewhat doubt it. Nick doesn't tend to do that.
Yeah.
It's okay, though. Because if they space them out, it'll minimize the wait until book two. So yeah, I think we should start talking about the episode now.
Sweet.
So yeah, if you haven't seen the episode yet, don't listen from this point on. And Yeah, so episode one, Welcome to Republic City. Okay, first general impressions, Mina, go.
I really liked it. I thought all of the new voice actors were part of my, I think my favorite part. I love J.K. Simmons as Tenzin. Was really great. I loved, he was really funny, even though like in his serious kind of thing. And I thought the White Lotus like involvement was also like a new interesting development. And bringing back Katara was great for the new the old fans. I loved the kids. They were really funny. So I'm really interested in all the characters, and I think that's great considering it's just one episode in.
Yeah. Okay. Mel, go.
I enjoyed it. I have some nitpicky issues with it, but overall, I think it, you know, it's definitely the beginning of something that was worth waiting 4 years for. To echo Mina, I really enjoyed Katara. I did like the voice actors, however, I do, in my own opinion, think that the voice actor for Korra sounds a little bit too old for her part, but I love J.K. Simmons. I actually particularly enjoyed Katara's voice actress. But overall, I enjoyed it, besides some nitpicky things that we'll get into with the rest of the discussion. Overall, positive, though.
Okay, Sam?
I enjoyed it immensely, put it that way. What did I enjoy about it? The music, Naga, Korra, who is freaking awesome, Lin Beifong, who is freaking awesome, Tenzin, who is freaking awesome, everybody's freaking awesome, you know? I don't know. I just really like that the animation is great, music, as I said. Writing is, but we'll get to that. And, yeah, it's wicked awesome, not freaking awesome, it's wicked.
From Boston?
Totally awesome, let's put it that way.
Totally awesome.
Yes, it is.
Leave that in.
So Allie is temporarily unavailable, so I'll go now. I like the episode a lot. I thought there were problems, especially in writing, but there are problems to be expected when it's the first episode. I thought the music was amazing, the animation was amazing, the production in general is amazing. I thought they have some really good things that can get established in future episodes. I'm a little skeptical of the overall Republic City plotline, and I guess we'll get into that. Just where they're taking it. It could work. I mean, the music's definitely there, and the animation, I think, is very good. But I think we're definitely... The writing is definitely not what we've seen from the best of Avatar episodes. And we'll get into that, too. Let's go through some of the likes and dislikes of the episode. Thank you, Outline.
You're welcome.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say. Mel outlined this episode. Thank you, Mel.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so basically, give me the thing you liked most. It could be a plot point. It could be just a general thing like animation, or it could be anything. And the thing you like least about the episode, Mina.
All right, well, I guess I'm not supposed to do this, but I have two favorite likes, and I can't choose between them. And it's got to be the music, because the music has always been my favorite thing about Avatar. It's what keeps me coming. And also, the animation is just so much better than what we've seen in the past. So much higher quality, and it's really impressive. And as for dislikes, I thought some of the characters could have been a little, I don't know, I'm skeptical about some of them, like Pema specifically. Wasn't a big fan. So, okay.
Mel.
Alright, I'm sorry, I have two again as well. It's music as well, because I just really love the step up in music, the way it's very much like they said, like if jazz had been invented in Asia in the 1920s, I think is how they described the music. And that's exactly what it sounds like, and I think it's great. And my other favorite thing about it was Lin Beifong, because she's my new hero. Her, totally. You know, minute and a half of just being angry about life on screen just brightens my world, and I think she's fabulous. Two things I did not like. Plot pacing, like the overall pacing of the plot was, to me, the biggest problem. And the second thing I didn't like was the lack of exposition, I guess. Not that you want to be heavy in exposition, but there were some blank holes or blank spots that I would have liked to see filled in a little bit. I'm sure we're going to get them later, but I would have liked to see them up front just to get a firm grounding in this, you know, new world that we're in. So those were my likes and dislikes.
Okay. I think that's an interesting one, because I definitely think the lack of exposition was a conscious choice. And I think that a lot of people would say that they enjoyed that it went right into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we'll discuss that. We can do that now.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. So so that would be one of my dislikes, too, is that the pacing was very fast in the episode. And it's like Mike and Brian had a list of things they need to establish in this episode, and they go check, 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 check on like 10-second scenes or sometimes 30-second scenes. And some of them are very just blandly written and blandly executed. But the plus side of that is we get to see like two or three great fight scenes in the opening episode, which is pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a trade-off, and I don't know. Do other opinions on this lack of exposition?
I think that, like you said, the pacing is definitely a conscious choice because, first of all, there's only, 26 episodes? So, you know, obviously they're going to have to shrink things down and, you know, make those decisions. And, you know, coming from the background of 61 episodes, we're probably going to think this is a lot more fast-paced. And I think that's okay if they implement it well, which I think they can do a better job of. Specifically in this episode, I was thinking of Amon at the very end had, like, a 3-second thing, and it didn't really give me any emotions at all, so that could have been done better, for example.
Okay, other opinions? No,
I just
no
have
other
my
opinions.
No.
Okay,
Sam?
Nope.
We'll come back to this. Allie can now talk. So, Allie, first give us your general impression of the episode, and then give me a one dislike and like.
First impression, I was just pretty much freaking out that it was, like, finally here. But then, I mean, I was freaking out about everything. Pretty much just the animation was incredible. And I guess I'm just going to jump into my like, because that was the thing I liked the most about it now, was just the animation. And I guess I would say the music, too. But animation always comes first for me, I guess. And Korra is awesome. So, yeah.
No dislikes?
Oh, dislikes. Like Mel said, the pacing was too fast, but I mean, it's understandable that they did that, I think. So, and I guess someone's voice actress kind of bothered me, but it's not really important, so.
No, do tell. I'm curious.
It's not important. It's okay.
Who is it?
Okay, we'll get to it later. did I get Sam's likes and dislikes?
No.
I didn't forget. Okay.
Yeah, you did. Okay.
I was on the verge of forgetting.
Okay, maybe.
My like, I like the animation a lot, because, you know, it's pretty. It's very pretty. It's prettier than Avatar, I would say. And my dislike, pacing, definitely. And I want to say use of cliches, because there's a lot of cliches in this episode.
Yeah, I
agree. Definitely agreed.
Yeah, and I think we'll get to that. Okay, now I want to start talking about specific parts of the episode.
Yeah.
Let's start from the beginning. The opening credit. Oh, we have not discussed the opening credit. The open. I mean, it's pretty much kind of the same as Avatar, which I think is a good decision. Have we discussed the opening credits on this?
No.
I don't remember.
Yes, we did actually on the spoilers podcast.
Did we?
We did.
Oh, I was there for that.
We did.
Okay,
I was
so
there.
Let's skip past that and go to the opening scene of the White Lotus coming to find young Korra. I think this is definitely one of the strongest points of the episode.
So good.
Her parents are hot.
She was chubby.
She was adorable.
I'm not saying she wasn't cute. She was just chubby. She had a gut.
No one's mentioned the line yet.
I'm the Avatar. You gotta deal with it.
Believe it.
Not believe it.
Shantae-bayo.
God damn.
Shantae-bayo.
Okay. Yes.
Is that the line you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not Dante Bayo.
Okay, let's stop that.
It's a huge meme now. I'm the Avatar. You gotta deal with it.
Yeah. It has. It's spread around the fandom very quickly. It's in an episode of cliches. This one kind of stood out as a great original line that established her character from a young age, and I give Mike and Brian total credit for that in getting that line.
That's why I liked the scene the most, was that, like, it showed, like, the kind of person she was gonna, like, become.
Yeah.
You gotta deal with it.
It was a nice initial contrast between her and Aang, because Aang, as we know, was reluctant to be the Avatar from the start.
Yeah.
And she's, like, 5 years old, like, I'm ready, like, let's do this.
Yeah.
Sort of attitude.
Instantly set up as the opposite of Aang, which is definitely what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on the White Lotus being more involved in this, seemingly, than the original series, when we were kind of not in the know of what their role was in the Avatar world?
I mean, for all we know, they could have been involved with the Avatar before. We don't know. But it did seem interesting that the White Lotus was kind of regulating the, I guess you call it, like, finding the Avatar and training the Avatar and bringing the Avatar up to...
Like, searching for her?
Yeah. Like, searching for her, training her, designating her.
Yeah, because the White Lotus people stay with her, seemingly, yeah, throughout her entire life.
Yeah, it looks like, you know, I would assume that they designated her masters, they regulated her training, and that's something we, if, you know, having Aang as the only person to go off of, well, and I guess Roku, we didn't see that with those two, for the most, I don't think we saw that. I mean, Roku seemed to be going off of his own... I mean, the people who had the most influence on Roku were the sages, the people who had the most influence on Aang were the monks. It looked like, at that time, it was delegated to their birth nation. Here, the White Lotus is got their hand in the Avatars.
Yeah, agreed. Instead. And I think that may have been set up by Aang himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, one of the White Lotus members said that, like, explicitly. Yeah. So,
thank you for mentioning that.
He did say that Aang tests us, yeah. With, I forgot the exact line.
Keeping you safe while you learn the four elements.
Yes, so it's very interesting.
I mean, that
could refer to a general kind of, the previous Avatar has put it on us as responsibility. Or it could be specifically Aang, which is how it probably came off to most people.
Well, also, I mean, I don't know about the Northern Water Tribe. It's probably, you know, it's a lot more civilized and organized, but the Southern Water Tribe wouldn't have, like, a sort of group to help the Avatar anyway, so the White Lotus would have had to step in, I think.
Yeah, and I think that may have been why. But then again, how did Aang know that Korra would be born into the Southern Tribe?
To me it looked like they were traveling down there. I didn't think when he said you, he meant you specifically, Korra. I think he meant, you know, whoever the next Avatar is.
Yeah, well, it says they'd investigated claims from the Northern Tribe, too.
Yeah, and I think the White Lotus's involvement in this is just, you know, tied in with this idea of unity that he and Zuko were going for with building Republic City. You know, now it's not just the Birth Nation regulating the Avatar's training. It's a group of people from different nations.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's more towards the unity thing. That's seemingly Aang's theme as an Avatar in creating Republic City, too. Yeah, and so after this scene, we get an immediate transfer into her training.
Excellent transition right there.
It's
by the
a
way.
Great transition. Yeah, it's a very, very quick transition. I think that was also a conscious decision.
It's fantastic.
Because we could have seen her growing up in like a couple short scenes, but it's right away. We don't get much, like, we don't know how Korra growing up in the Southern Water Tribe is. Maybe we'll see flashbacks. I don't think we will.
Well, I don't think we need it. I think that opening scene with that line and then the transition right into her. I guess it was a firebending test, was, I think, just set up completely her character, and we didn't really need to see her younger years.
Okay, yeah, but so counterpoint on that is that kind of sets her up as a one-dimensional character, though.
Yeah,
because
true.
We just get to see this one side of her throughout the entire episode. But there is times when she seems vulnerable, maybe not just as hot-headed, but it is hard to get the plot moving in the first episode and establish the major character as multidimensional, which, I mean, they did well enough, I'd say.
Yeah, plus, I mean, in trailers that Nick has released, it looks like more vulnerabilities are going to be surfacing.
Yeah, like she cries in some of the trailers.
Yeah. Assuming you've seen the trailers, yes.
Yeah, yeah. We're not talking about anything not in the trailers, which you can go watch, links on Dongbufeng. So yeah, we get the transition, we have the fighting scene, then we have her, then here there's Katara showing up.
Oh my gosh.
Love her, she's great.
Her loopy's intact.
Yeah.
She's strong.
Oh my gosh. Not this again, please.
We already discussed Katara back in the spoilers podcast.
But yeah, she's back. It's kind of awesome.
Her many of my friends are gone, she says. She doesn't say which aren't.
Yes, all we know is Sokka.
Toph is in the statue.
Toph is in
the statue. That is my theory.
In the statue, yeah.
I would like to point out that's my theory.
Yes, and what they mean is literally they think Toph is inside the statue.
She will emerge when her people need her most.
Exactly.
Okay. So,
100 years.
Let's assume Toph is not literally in the statue. She's probably dead because she is a statue made of her.
No, she's immortal.
Wait, can we...
She made that statue herself, and she's still alive.
While we're still in the scene, can we just talk about the naming of the children of...
We're not there yet. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, we're still on the training scene.
Okay.
Oh my God. Technically. Yeah, so the spirit, Katara does not... excels at the physical side, not at the spiritual side. People seem to be reading into this as a theme for the entire series. What do you guys think they'll be focusing on this throughout the whole thing, the Avatar State thing again?
Yeah.
Maybe not
well,
the
she's
whole
learning everything.
Maybe not like the whole thing, but I feel like they would focus on it like for most of the thing. Like it's pretty important, I think.
And I think Mina brings a good point that it's probably going to be able to play a big part in airbending. But we don't really know for sure because we don't kind of know how airbending works, and I think that was part of the motivation to create Korra, series.
Don't we know that it is very spiritual, though?
We know it's very spiritual, yes. So.
At this point, though, I don't think the Avatar State is what the problem is going to be. It's
spirituality.
Thank you. In general. Again, more contrast between her and Aang, because Aang, as somebody said, I think Korra said it herself, she called Tenzin Mr. Spiritual, but Aang was basically Mr. Spiritual, too, and Korra, again, is excelling at the physical, where Aang was having trouble with the physical, but excelled well at the spiritual, minus the Avatar State.
Yeah, another contrast there, good one. Yeah, and then, okay, so next we get Tenzin arriving, I think. I think this was one of the stronger points of the episode, establishing Tenzin's family in Tenzin. And I think this was done very well. Thoughts on, so we immediately kind of see the difference between Jinora, who's the studious one, and Ikki, who's the energetic one.
My God.
I love both of them. They're so awesome.
Yeah, I think both of them are very good.
Ikki is annoying.
And then
Ikki,
you're annoying.
Jinora, a.k.a. Hermione.
She's awesome.
And then we get Milo, who apparently has to have an anime effect on him all the time.
Don't talk about
that. Was that one time? One time.
His face is kind of...
Don't bring my mother into this! Wait, what about Milo, though?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, Milo.
Oh, yeah.
He's nominal.
Oh, I thought you said Tenzin.
Oh, I don't know.
Strange woman?
Yeah. Some people, I thought, I remember Jake commenting when we were talking about it, that he was not acting up, not in a way that you'd expect, so maybe to some people,
yeah, he's eating his father's head.
Okay, well, not that, but shouldn't call his grandmother strange woman, stuff like that.
Well, then again, you know, Tenzin does say that it's been, like, a long time since they've seen Korra, right? So he might have not been born, right?
Or he was tiny.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, since...
That kind of makes sense.
Okay, now let's... Jinora's introduction, the Zuko's mom line.
I'm not happy about it.
I want to hear everyone's thoughts on this.
Can I talk first?
Okay,
first? Okay, you know what? First of all, I knew them for a minute. I thought she was going to be like, oh, I was reading your adventures, and I thought she was going to ask a question about Aang. The minute she said Zuko's mama, I was like, oh, this is just cruel, because I know she's going to get cut off, because then she's like, it's a glorious and wonderful story, and then that child who's just bouncing off the walls comes in and talks about snowmen and
waterbending,
being chased by snowmen. So I mean, I think it's funny that they did it, because they're acknowledging the fandom and in a way almost breaking the fourth wall, but it just furthered my frustration with, I think it was Mike who didn't want to put it in.
Yes, Mike did not want to put it in.
Yeah, him.
Allie, like or dislike?
Liked or disliked?
That line, did you like it or not like it?
Well, I loved it and hated it. I mean, it's pretty much the same as Mel. Like, I expected her to get cut off, and I was just like, I laughed at it, like, after she was like, Gran, how old are you? You look really old. Like, it was adorable, and I also wanted to punch something at the end of it.
Okay, Mina, what do you think?
Mike and Brian are such teases. I mean, they ended, well, not ended the series, but it was in the last episode was, Where is My Mother? And now in the first episode of the next series, they do the same thing to us. It's twice. So, they're driving me insane.
Sam, what do you think?
Oh, I didn't like it, because it kind of established Ikki as kind of a brat. Well, not like a brat, but just like a hyped up little thing.
Don't say it.
I'm not going to say it. A hyped up little thing. And I don't know, like, it's just like a huge tease. And, you know, we might learn something in The Promise about it, but other than that, I don't know. Like, it's just,
if they,
like,
tease us until the end and not tell us in The Promise, I will body check Viacom's headquarters. I will literally run up to it and smash myself against.
It's just like, oh, wink, wink. We didn't tell you about Zuko's mom.
Okay, I'm kind of opposite all of you on this. I thought that was the funniest line of the episode. And see, here's the thing. You need to not, like, crave for that information. Like,
I crave for it.
There's no point. Who cares what happened to Ursa? Oh my goodness.
Dylan, you have an established hatred of Zuko. That's not, so I feel like you're a little
it's
bit
not
biased.
A hatred of Zuko, but yes, I do not care about that plotline as much.
No, that's me.
Let's ask the podcast fans.
I don't like Zuko.
Yes, this is true. Send in your opinions on that line, because here's why I love that line. It's like self-referential in a way that the rest of the episode isn't, and it's like, and it also establishes Jinora's character, and it also establishes that, like, Aang's saga is, like, legendary in the Avatar world, and it does all of these things at once. And I think that like I said this before about the first line, in an episode of cliches, this stands out too, this line. And yeah, I just really liked it a lot. And then, yeah, we get Ikki interrupting. And I thought both of them were great. Thoughts? Pema does not really have much screen time.
Here
she's
we go.
Big pregnant woman.
Okay, why did you guys... I've been hearing a lot of, I don't like this, Pema. Why not?
Yeah.
The minute she opened her mouth, I just was annoyed with the way she was talking and the things she was doing. And I was like, I don't know. I honestly can't give you a reason why I don't like her. I just don't like her.
I don't know.
I think her character on the show is just going to be, I'm pregnant, everyone. Don't
Pretty much.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, see, that's the thing with the quick first episode. We only get to see one aspect of her. Maybe we'll see more later.
Also, I mean, what she's saying, like, oh, for once I just want a normal kid who doesn't need to do this. She seems like kind of, like, not a brat, but there's a bad word that I'm not going to say, but
okay, well,
I'm like a brat.
So, the thing with that is a lot of us expect her, like, to be repopulating the airbenders, but it's not like they've been established as thinking like that.
Yeah.
We don't, for her, it's understandable, so... I mean, there's already three more airbenders in the world. That's kind
I know,
of
but
success.
just the way she's like, oh, I don't want any more kids, like that kind of thing. Kind of. Maybe I'm reading into
well,
it
she
wrong.
Didn't say she didn't
know.
Want any more kids. She
no, but it's like
anymore.
She's like talking, like, whatever, never mind.
Yeah, okay. She
said she wanted a non-bender, not she didn't want any more kids.
I also think that line is as a setup to the Equalists. I think that's what they're trying to do there.
Yeah.
And I liked what... Sam said, is Pema a secret Equalist? I guess we'll see.
I'm the crazy conspiracy theorist.
Pema is Amon.
Oh my god.
We'll definitely get into this later.
Ursa is Amon. What are you talking about?
That's what I said. What are you stealing my theory?
Cabbage merchant.
Okay.
Now
let's get into the Katara and Korra scene, the sentimental one. We'd seen it before in the spoilers, but... Great
wait,
scene.
Wait, 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 wait.
You are skipping over so much stuff.
Wait,
what am I skipping
Kaya
over?
And Bumi.
Oh, okay, it's Kaya. That's the one thing I'm skipping over. What do you think of the names Kaya and Bumi as the other
They're
two kids?
Stupid.
Okay, why are they stupid?
Because it's like a fanfic thing, dude. It's like they looked through a fanfic. First fanfic on fanfiction.net said, oh, Bumi, that's a good name.
Here's why it's not stupid. They're going to name their children after people that they loved. Aang loves Bumi, and... Katara loves her mother, so that's
I wouldn't do that.
I'm with Dylan.
I understand Kaya, but not Bumi.
That's
Bumi
thing.
Is just
okay. You guys just don't like it because it's a weird name. That's
no, it's
no,
no, it's because
no,
like
no, no,
they could
no,
say
no, no.
Gyatso or something, but not
Dylan,
Bumi.
I agree with you. It's the reason I don't like it because it's a weird name. However, I would have seen Gyatso before I saw Bumi. Kaya, I expect
Thank
it. I'm fine
you.
With that. I would have seen Gyatso before Bumi.
Yeah.
I'm actually shocked that he chose Bumi over Gyatso.
I just hate
and then
it.
Tenzin's
it's...
over here named after nobody. Like, not
yeah,
only is he the only airbender, but now he's the only child with a name that doesn't matter to anybody. So
That is true. Why did they name
I hate
Tenzin
it because
Tenzin?
It's the biggest fan fiction cliche out there. Naming, you
it's
know.
True.
Kids,
yeah, but
characters kids after other characters.
I'm gonna make a bet with somebody right now that one of Zuko's children is named Iroh.
I will take that bet.
Right.
Or Luten.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
So but it is a fan fiction thing, but it's also a thing that happens in real life. We didn't necessarily get that established as a thing in the Avatar world. So
we're
that's
not talking about Harry Potter, Sam.
Yeah, we're not talking about everybody.
No,
so Okay, quick poll before we get to this later in the podcast. Yes or no, is Amon Boomy?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Kind of.
Was that everyone?
No.
No? Okay, except so we got three yeses and no. We'll get to that later. That's one of our big theories. Okay. So then, okay, we have the Katara and Korra scene. Sentimental, great. Everyone's... Sokka's at least dead, we know that. And many of her friends.
He's on vacation.
He's not on vacation.
So sad.
Ember Island.
Yeah. Exactly.
Changed
his retired Ember
Lake Lao Guy, Lake Lao Guy.
Oh my god.
That's where they all are.
Okay, yeah. Then we get to... Okay, so then... Then Korra goes onto a shipping...
It looks like a Fire Nation ship.
Yeah. How did she sneak onto there with a polar bear dog and she's the Avatar?
Very carefully.
So she sneaks onto the ship somehow, and then she stays there without food or water somehow. And then it's at least a day, and then she gets to Republic City. And then we immediately get to see Republic City. First of all, it's beautiful, like we've seen in the trailers.
Mm-hmm. And the music in that scene.
Yes.
Yeah.
The music in that scene is very good. I mean, a lot of and the her training scene in the beginning and that one fight scene. Oh my god. But yeah. Real world parallels. Yeah, that's a good thing to discuss first.
Okay, yeah.
Let's get into the technology. So here's the okay. They have radios, let's go over all this technology. They have cameras, they have
microphones.
They have microphones. Mobile
lane highways.
What did they call the cars? Was it
suspension bridges?
Saddle. They called it saddle machines or something.
Saddle mobiles or something.
Saddle mobiles. Yeah. Thank you.
It seems like Hiroshi Saito created the cars. Is that a thing? I think that might be a thing. I've read Hiroshi Saito created the Statomobile. I think that might be true.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, well, that's okay. I think that might be someone listening to it, like us, but someone put that on Wikipedia, so it might be true.
I would not trust Wikipedia.
I mean, I think this might be coming from that Coronation Press site, which had some bios. I can check that while we're going. So the question, the big question is that we've been debating this for a while: is this technology jump A, realistic, and B, do you like it?
Some parts of it. I'm okay with, like, the cars, I can get behind that because they've had ships and other machines that have been powered in similar ways. But radio, like, the ability to broadcast frequencies and the use of microphones and cameras is a bit of a stretch for me because that's nothing like anything we've seen before. It was like jumping from medieval Asia to 1920s Hong Kong.
Maybe not that extreme, but...
It was a pretty big jump, though.
Because, once they get, like, the steam engine and everything, the Industrial Revolution comes full force. I think, like, that speed might still be a little bit realistic. I'm not sure.
Yeah, so I've heard...
It's like a city, too, you know, everybody's, like, working together. And so, you know, I think that technology would obviously, like, advance there if you have multiple benders together working.
My biggest problem, though, is the radio, the ability to broadcast a frequency. Yeah.
And problem is the camera and radio.
And you can't bend that either. That's not a
bend. Joey, they could have the mechanist there.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Okay, well, okay, so I've heard Jeff argue that this technology jump is realistic. It depends where you start from. And we've already had some significant technology advances in the original series. But here's my complaint, is that the technology jump should not be analogous to that of our world, because bending is pretty much fueling technology in the Avatar world. Mm-hmm. So
That's my problem with it, too.
It shouldn't be the same, the same jumps or the same discoveries. It's easier for us to understand. But if this is a separate world, why are they creating these things? You think they'd get different products of bending? That's a little bit nitpicky.
Yeah, those cars are identical to cars of that era in our world as well.
Like the automobiles.
Yeah, like the styles are almost identical.
It's like the Model T, but so like why do they have that? It's easier for us to understand. Fine. They're going for a 1920s thing, okay. But it's just it's weird to see our technology in the Avatar world, basically.
Nitpicking.
It is nitpicking, but I think it will play a role, definitely.
That's why we have a podcast.
That is why we have a podcast.
That was exactly the problem I had with it, but I'm going to let it go because I'm biased and whatever happens.
I just cannot wrap my mind around the radio.
And because I love the art direction.
Exactly. Oh my god, the art. Don't start with the art. I will go on like an hour.
I cannot wrap my mind around that radio, but whatever.
Okay, and then we get to see some of the downsides of the city right away. Obviously, they're trying to establish the city as... not a perfect place. Instantly, this is not a utopia. This isn't Ba Sing Se.
But wait, I had a problem here. Because, New York. I know what they were trying to do in this episode very quickly was to, you know, make it, like, not a utopia, but I feel like they should have shown some good side, too. They didn't, and that, I had a problem with that. They had, like, three really bad things and nothing good.
Well, maybe there is nothing good in it. I mean, it could be the idea of a dystopia, which is, you know, the utopia that is not.
Well, I don't think they're going for a dystopia, but I agree with Mina here that there's, I mean, yeah, we get to see the city beautiful. It's got a good law enforcement system, I guess. Other than that,
Lin Beifong.
Yeah, I was gonna say about the law enforcement. God. You don't think it's good?
I think it's good. So yeah, that's one positive thing. And I think we'll get to see more.
Just
in later episodes. I think that's the point, though. But okay. But yeah, it's too negative. We get to see the mafia. It's the mafia.
Wait. Well, that park is Central Park. Just saying. That's it.
Yeah, they're basing it on New York and Shanghai. Yes,
I know, but it definitely is.
Just go in there real quick before you change. Like another thing too is like the 1920s, the Roaring Twenties. I mean, this is an American show, so at least in America. Well, I'm just saying. You know, that was a time of, you know, that preceded the Depression. You know, everyone was spending and having fun and great. And then all of a sudden, you know, all this crap happens. So, you know, it could be something along that. You see this beautiful city that looks gorgeous to look at and this beautiful artwork. And it looks, you know, like everyone's having a great time when in reality things are not so great.
Yeah. And I think they do have to establish it quickly. Get on with the plot. That's what they're going for. And the things that aren't so great, we get to see the mafia. What did you guys think of them instantly bringing in the mafia, the real world thing?
Too soon.
And
their name was a mouthful.
Their name was something Triads, right?
Somebody referred to them as the Triads, but
Triple Threat.
They have a name?
Triple Threat Triads, yeah. So that's really weird. They're bringing in a real world name.
Oh, that's a fun name, Triple Threat.
I wasn't paying attention to that.
You watched the episode like 5 times.
I know, but I just skipped over that, I guess.
Yeah, so, I mean, do you guys like that there's mafia there?
I do, because
but it's like...
I actually think it's about time, and I was surprised that there wasn't something like that in the first series.
Yeah, because it's so easy to do with bending to non-benders. It seems like a natural jump.
Yeah.
Plus, it gives justification, I guess, to the hate, the anger against benders, because you have these, basically, bender bullies bullying people in the city who are not benders and can't defend themselves.
Yeah.
But it's something we've never really seen before either. We've only ever seen like political corruption or corruption on the level of Jet, you know, never really organized crime.
Yeah, and I think it's a new level, and I think it's very interesting, and I think they execute it well too.
And I think it will grow right over children's heads.
It will.
I like that there's like many different fronts of bad guyism, so to speak, in this show. Whereas you know, it was black and white in Avatar: The Last Airbender. The Fire Nation was the bad guys. In this show, clearly they're trying to get away from that, and I really hope that I hope, you know, firebending isn't a big mainstay in, like, the evil people in this show, because that would just suck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I disagree somewhat that it was black and white in the original series. There were moments, obviously, that, like...
Dylan's favorite, Zuko.
Zuko, yes, but more like Jet and stuff like that. We had, like, who's really the good guys here? We had a lot of that. But I think we don't know for sure that's what they're going to go for here. It seems like Amon's evil in this episode, so it would be very easy for them to say, oh, here's the non-bender side of this. It's sympathetic, but I think until we get that, we don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The next thing was... Okay, then she went looking for food. We had my least favorite scene in the episode, her at the food... the merchant's thing.
Wasn't that before the gang?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well,
I wrote it out of order.
We're going out of order. That's okay.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, so that was just really cliched, dumb writing.
It was kind of dumb.
I don't know why they had that in there.
You gotta get Allie to watch something about 5 times before she finally admits that it has fault, because right after watching this, she was gushing about how perfect it was.
Okay, you know what?
Yeah, but okay, I did like the, I did like in that scene, Naga, like we get to see Naga's face, and then that's pretty cool.
Naga's so cute.
Yeah.
We also get to see Naga as a, like, the dog side, so that was...
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was the first time we see that she has, like, control over Naga, kind of, because Naga just went running off once, before that scene. And it's like, oh, Naga, don't eat this. And I was like, okay. But yeah, that scene, I just, cliches, oh my god, bad writing. And then, right, then we get that, and then we get the, wait, which is first, the mafia or the...
The mafia comes last, or
the
after.
Okay, the homeless guy is for next, okay.
The homeless guy is Doc.
Not homeless guy, vagabond.
Yeah, the vagabond.
He's Doc.
This is
Sam. Yeah, he's Doc from The Painted Lady. It's definitely true.
This is my least favorite part of the episode.
You definitely just said
the
least favorite thing.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a tie. It's a between. We get this homeless guy who's in a bad situation. He lives in a bush. We establish that. He needs food, yet he is so positive. And it's like, oh, here's this. It's like, I got a skedaddle. It's the 1920s. Yay. Let's be all peppy and stuff. It's like, first of all, it's like, okay, being homeless is okay. That's the impression you get from that.
No, it's not.
Yeah, that's the impression I got.
He gets I'd like to be homeless in that park.
They're sugarcoating it for kids. I'm not saying that's okay, but that is why they're doing
they're
it. You know, they're turning it into comic relief.
Yes, so why?
But hey, I don't know why they're sugarcoating it now when in... Tales of Bossing say that homeless guy tried to, you know, assassinate Iroh.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've showed this realistically before. The poverty in Bossing say was greatly portrayed. Why can't they do that here?
Comic relief.
It was comic relief, but it was such a bad time for comic relief.
Yeah.
Like, this is execution we didn't see in Avatar. Well, we saw childish things, but we didn't see things that were downgraded into being childish.
To me, it was like they were trying to combine a lot of things in one. Like, yes, showing that the city isn't that great, and at the same time, providing a comic relief. For some reason, I guess they thought they needed it, because it seemed like his only point was comic relief. I mean, nothing really was gained by knowing, okay, he lives in a bush, there's homeless people, that's fantastic.
His bush sparkles.
Yeah,
damn it.
They're putting the comic relief.
Actually, I'm pretty sure Edward Cullen was in the bush. The bush wasn't sparkling.
No.
They're putting the comic relief over... the point they should have been trying to making, which is the city has poverty, let's establish this as a bad thing, along with the mafia, along with the non-bender revolution. It just didn't work. Do you agree? Anyone strongly disagree with me?
I agree with you, and part of my problem is that they're trying to push a lot of issues with the city on at once as well. I mean, our main issue is the anti-bender movement, and now you've established this, albeit comic relief, you know, the idea of poverty and homelessness in the city. So, you know, I'm just wondering if they're going to go anywhere with that, or if it was just, let's throw this in there. And if it was just throw this in there, you know, I definitely like it less.
Yeah.
Well, also, I wanted to point out that we've been hearing in interviews from basically everybody that this is a darker series, but I just didn't see that in this episode, you know? Like... Mm-hmm. And that's a perfect example of how I didn't see it, because that could have been opportunity right there to be darker, and it wasn't.
The first episode, and I mean, I think we're going to have to wait a little more to see if it is going to be, like, darker than they're saying it is. I don't think they're going to, like, jump right into it in the first episode.
Well, the animation is definitely brighter.
Well, we definitely see in the trailer... we definitely see in the trailer that when Amon is talking again, the trailers are fair game, but Amon is... talking to Korra, and he says, like, I'm saving you for last, or something like that. Like, that was very, very creepy. Because first of all, it's this grown man basically bullying.
Well, we don't know if it's
this
a grown man.
Girl who...
His hands are...
I mean, we don't know if it's
her.
A grown man.
He's like,
of course
even if he's
man.
Not saying that to her, his hands are, like, on her in that scene. This is, like, you know, a for all intents and purposes...
It's like
purposes.
Frollo and Esmeralda.
A grown man... You know, bullying a girl who's threatening to kill her and saying, oh, I'm going to kill you last. You know, that's kind of a very scary thing.
And then
we see her, you know, crying, you know, with Tenzin. So I think it will get darker.
Okay.
Do you think that the crying in that crying scene is a result of that Amon thing, or do you think they're separate things?
We're talking about the trailer, by the way.
She said she was scared, but I guess we can talk about that later when it actually shows up in an episode.
They cut it to seem like it was from Amon, but we don't know for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on because we got off track a little. Then we get to see the metal thoughts on the metal bending police.
I like it.
Me too. I was happy that they weren't just metal bending and that they're actually also earth bending.
Yeah, because for a second I was like, wait, is there a fifth element?
Yeah, I thought that was cool. It's a very good use of metal bending, bringing that back in, and they don't dwell on it at all. They just keep going. Like, that could be a major thing. Like, that was a major plot point in the season 2 finale, and then bringing that back in, that could be major part, but nope, it's just right in, let's keep going, no exposition. And I think it works in that case. And then we get to see Chief Lin Beifang. What do you guys think of Lin?
She is a goddess.
Awesome.
Best character.
Fantastic.
Interesting. You guys are very positive on Lin.
I just, even though she spent a minute and a half ranting about how much she like basically hated everyone, I love her. She's perfect.
Well, I think they need to get some more into her character. She's very stereotypical.
Well, she seems to have...
Seriously, she's been on screen for like 2 minutes.
Yeah. She seems, but in those 2 minutes, there was also an establishment that, you know, she's not exactly, it seems, pleased with, you know, Toph's, you know, legacy, what Toph did, what Aang did. And
yeah, that's true. That's an interesting thing.
I have to say that I'll be extremely disappointed if they don't get into that, because like they set it up in the first episode and it's right there, and like you can clearly tell that there's something about that past that she needs to like get out.
Yeah. So here's the thing: you'd assume that Toph's daughter and Aang's son would be friends, and it doesn't seem like they're fond of each other, or that they've been fond of each other, so there's some sort of backstory to that, and it seems like they're setting that up, which is very...
They need to release a comic for that.
They could flash back to that.
Yeah, actually, we were talking about this before, like, we'd like to see just Aang's children and Sokka's children and all the children, like, growing up.
Oh, how much would I love to see that.
Because, you know, it is interesting, because, I mean, you assume that all these kids kind of grew up together, and, I mean, it's enough to know that, you know, Korra knew that she was very good friends with the Avatar and was questioning, well, why are you treating me like this when, you know, you were very good friends with the Avatar, and yet that isn't... Also, another thing you'd assume, you know, in this Republic City is, once again, not the case, and it's something more negative.
Yeah. It's very interesting. And I think Lin Beifang will be an interesting character to get into.
Great facial expressions.
That scene between them staring at each other.
Oh my gosh, background on my phone.
It is, I've seen it.
Okay, and then after Tenzin bails out Korra, we get the scene where Tenzin has like the red face. I did not like that.
It was so cute. It was cute.
It's funny, but I don't think that's necessary in the show. They very infrequently in Avatar had like these anime effects, and it just seems kind of somewhat off whenever they do it. And
they didn't. I mean, I remember Nightmares and Daydreams.
Yeah, Nightmares and Daydreams did it a couple times,
and they did it in the beach too with like Azula.
Yeah.
Oh, they did. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It's very infrequent. So why are they doing it here? I don't even think it was that funny.
Why
honestly.
Not?
I just like the line and the exchange.
Yeah, me too.
I don't care about what he looked like.
I don't know. I'd prefer they cut down on that.
Leave mommy out of this.
Mommy.
Okay, this is a good time to talk about Tenzin's character. What do you guys think of him in general?
I love him so much.
So perfectly voiced.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was funny because I was picturing his voice to be, I forgot the character's name, but the guy from Spider-Man. I was just picturing that, like,
the raspy
voice. And
the guy who owns the Daily Bugle, I think it's called?
Yeah, but I forgot. Yes, thank you. And I was picturing his voice to be like all, you know, like raspy and stuff. And then when he started talking, I was like, oh my god, you're perfect. Like, everything is so perfect.
I'm so biased. Something interesting, like, I agree. I like Tenzin's character. I like that he's a break from Aang, kind of, you know, serious, in the serious aspect. One thing I found that was interesting kind of with his relationship with Korra is that, you know, they both had a scene where they looked up at the statue. And I think it, you know, kind of shows that they're both kind of living in Aang's shadow. You know, Korra as his successor and Tenzin as his son, who was the only child who had airbending. And I think that's an interesting bond that they share.
Can I make a point there? I noticed, oh god, one of my favorite scenes in the episode actually was when Tenzin looks at Aang's statue and then looks at Korra and kind of his face lowers and he's just like, I'll do this for you, dad, sort of thing, you know?
Yeah,
and I think there's something there with Tenzin's relationship to Aang. We don't know much about it. It'll be interesting to see. That kind of was telling, though.
Yeah, for all we know, it's, you know, because it's not Avatar unless you have daddy issues, so.
Exactly. And I think Tenzin's character is very, also somewhat one-sided. We get to see some other aspects. I wonder if we'll ever see a negative side to him.
Wouldn't the negative side be that he is, like, too serious sometimes?
Agreed.
Well, we might see that.
I think that's not really a negative side, but...
Well, that's maybe, like...
That, you know, kind of blown up, too, in later episodes, you know, at the point when Korra may need somebody who's not going to be, you know, a serious mentor, but maybe a friend, and that's something he's not quite sure he knows how to provide, because he is so serious all the time. I don't think we've seen him once yet crack a smile, in the slightest.
And also, I just, like... all of the airbending we've seen so far is so whimsical, and yeah. I feel like we're not going to see that, and I'm very curious to see what his bending style is going to be like, because he was taught by Aang, but because he's more serious, I can't imagine him doing, like, the air scooter or anything like that.
Yeah, that will be very interesting. And then at the end, we get Korra at the, at Air Temple Island, it is, and then we get to re-see the Tenzin's family, and then Tenzin gives in and stuff, and...
Oh, just to reinforce that Korra is strong.
As Kara mentioned,
she lifted 3 children and a full-grown man. So
she did lift. Yes,
she is strong.
And it was fantastic.
Seems unrealistic to me.
Kara said she was strong.
It is
children's
cartoon.
Do not doubt.
Okay, so that's
her biceps have biceps.
That,
Allie.
Yeah.
Well, it's a cartoon. You can't say this is illogical because it's a fantasy
Avatar
world.
Avatar is very logical, so it's we should expect more things from them. Okay, we kind of discussed all the major characters.
Last scene. Though.
Katara, will she survive the series?
No.
Yes.
No. She's going to die.
Here's an
absolutely great not.
Grandchildren.
Here's a point of information for you guys. Eva, it's either Saint Maria or Marie Saint, which is her voice actress.
It's probably Saint Maria. That makes a lot more sense than Maria Saint.
Eva Marie Saint is
okay.
Listed as a quote-unquote special guest star in the credits. Just saying.
Oh, no.
Well, that could mean one of two things. One, obviously, it could mean that Katara is going to die, which I am...
She's not going to die!
That is my theory I'm backing. However, it could also mean just that her character does not appear in every episode.
Yeah, like, yes, we true. Never saw Grangren after the first episode.
Yeah.
We hear about her, because Paku may...
Yeah, we hear about her, but we never see her again.
But, you know... I do think Katara is going to die because, you know, he needed her. Would you be quiet? He needed her in the first episode because she is, you know, we needed a character who was the link between the two different ages. And obviously, Katara is the obvious choice. Now that we have that link established, you know, I don't think there's much more need of her, yeah. Especially since she's already trained Korra in waterbending. And Korra has now left the Southern Water Tribe.
Yeah, but it would be
and interesting.
And I
don't think they can
more.
Just let Katara hang out, be like, oh, she's just not in episodes anymore. She's still
maybe
alive.
She'll be assassinated.
Oh my god.
Let's not kill off Katara. That would be better.
Yeah. She needs to have her third great granddaughter.
Not that I want her to
die. She dies quiet in her sleep.
But
yes, the fortune teller will be true.
Living that long. Like, how old is the oldest one? Like, 12?
She's going to be, like, 200 years old. Just deal with it.
According to the fortune teller, yes.
You gotta deal with it!
Do you think Mike and Brian are actually thinking about that?
No way. So yeah, let's continue. Okay, let's skip that one because we're running on time. Theories so far. Let's quickly discuss this Bumi as... basically, who is Amon... Okay, someone pronounce his name.
Amon,
okay. Who is Amon gonna be... Because he's behind a mask. Mask characters generally have some significance when they reveal themselves.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you don't mask a character unless there's something you're trying to hide, in my opinion.
He's the Phantom of the Opera.
I mean, although Ozai is kind of the exception to that, because they were just masking him to make him look scary.
I think they might be doing that, too, with that.
Yeah, and I hope they're not, but...
It would be so cool. If he was Aang Katara's son, that would be so
cool. Well, I'm just
cool.
going to go into this real quick, because I've been spewing this to all of you for the past...
You need to get it out, so
and
it needs to
look,
stop.
In the quickest way possible, I can explain this. Like, there, you know, there's nothing to say that all their children had to be benders. Obviously, spiritually speaking, it seems like it seems like they should be. But however, you know, Katara was the first waterbender born in a bunch of, you know, what is it, 2 or 3 generations. So there's anomalies. No, that is the word I'm looking for. You know what I'm trying to say? That exist in bending. My theory is if Bumi is Amon, he would obviously have to be a non-bender. And, you know, Tenzin, I'm not going to say he was the favorite child, but obviously he got the most attention from Aang because, you know, Aang had to train him in airbending so that he could pass it on to other people when he had children. And if he wasn't a bender, you know, that distances him from his siblings who were benders and from his father, the Avatar, if this is true. I mean... Going a little bit off the trailer, I guess, Amon seems to have it out for the Avatar. He said, I'll save you for last. I do believe he was talking to Korra in that scene. Katara. Katara in that scene. So, you know, my theory is basically Bumi was a non-bender. He, you know, that made him a little bit angry because it was a natural birthright for him, it seems like, and he was denied it. His father paid more attention to his younger brother because he had to teach him airbending, and that got him a little bit peeved, and it spiraled from there. That's just a theory, though. I may turn out, and I probably will turn out to be completely wrong, but yeah, that is
well, here's something I have to say to that. I don't think there's anything to say that Amon, just because he's the leader of the anti-bending movement, isn't a bender. In fact, I have a feeling that he's going to end up being a bender.
Yeah.
And my reasoning there is that he could have been, if we're going to go with like the Bumi theory, but really in any family, if he's the second son, then he's not going to get all of the, or, you know, if he's not getting all of the training that you know, somebody else in the family is getting, and he's not as good, and he's not the bending prodigy, then he might feel resentment towards the bending, even as a bender. And also, you know, there could be any sort of traumatic experience that would cause him to like never want to bend again, sort of thing. You know, like how Aang burns Katara.
Maybe
so
he killed Aang.
That's a good one.
Oh man.
Yes, all very interesting stuff. I think that's, I hadn't thought about him being a bender before. That's very interesting.
Can I just make a point on Mel's theory about the whole Amon being Bumi thing? I do support that theory, but Mina made a good point earlier, like when Katara was talking about Tenzin and his siblings, she said that Kaya and Bumi were like always like crazy. So that kind of hints that he might have been a bender. Which is the only reason why I'm kind of, like, iffy about that theory. But
I'm going to counter that real quick and say, you know I was there when you were talking. Like, I remember what he said, and for a minute I thought, yeah, that's kind of true. But at the same time, to me, that only hints that his personality was more carefree, not that he was a bender. Because when they were talking about, you know, the fact that the kids were, like, bouncing off the walls, like, every one of them, except for Hermione.
That's definitely a
Hermione.
Okay, I think the biggest thing with that scene is that Katara didn't look sad when she mentioned Bumi.
Yeah, that's true.
So I do expect to meet both of them though in the series. I think you can't just ignore them.
Well, you know, there's not been a good track record of people named Kaya.
Well, also Katara might not know that.
Yeah, if Katara doesn't know, that's the only thing.
That Kaya thing though, oh my gosh, it was horrible.
Just saying.
So yeah, we'll find out. Amon also could be a lot of other people.
He's a Zuko.
I just that's what I really hope it's not Zuko.
Yeah, because then we're, you know, going back to firebenders are the bad guys once again. I think it would be really interesting to show the son of the hero, the son of the Avatar, as the villain.
Yeah, and on all of this, Amon just might be a faceless figure. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's actually Ko.
No, I'm telling you guys, it's the cabbage merchant's son.
Oh, it's Ursa, clearly.
Okay.
I have actual reasoning.
What's your reasoning?
It has to be the cabbage merchant's son, because after all of these benders destroying those cabbage carts and then losing their livelihood, they had to move to the Fire Nation colonies where they were treated poorly, and then the Fire Nation colonies become Republic City, and it becomes, you know, they become even worse status, and he just gets all this resentment for benders, and Amon.
Cool story, bro.
Okay, and that's pretty much going to wrap up our discussion. Let me give the quick audible in thing. Say stuff after. Hidden Zutara will be coming after this quick advertisement.
You know, it's
okay, for you, listeners of From the Spirit World podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I'm not supposed to read that part. I personally recommend the book Legend by Marie Lu. It's a young adult dystopian novel. Kind of has the same feel, I think, Cora might have. It's a very good book, pretty interesting.
I thought we were going to recommend Macbeth.
I'm not going to recommend the audio version of Shakespeare. Yeah, but this is a very good book. I'd say 15 and up. Would be a good download, kind of recent book, young adult dystopian. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/FTSW. Again, that's audibletrial.com/FTSW. So now it is time for Hidden Zutara.
right, look.
Okay, so look here. Okay, here is what Hidden Zutara is for any of you who don't know. It is basically us. So Zutara is the ship of Zuko and Katara that never happened in the series, the original series, and it's Zutara. Some Zutara fans tried to find evidence of Zutara in very small places in the show.
Dylan, it never happened anywhere, not just in the original series.
Get a blindfold, Mina.
It happened on like
it can happen in it fanon. Happened on that's the fine. Internet. Yeah, no, that's fine. And
it's fanon. Let
yeah,
it be.
It's fanon. Let's see. Yeah. And what we're not making fun of it. We're making fun of something that's not Zutara.
Well, we're caricaturizing an aspect of something.
We're making fun of them. Just look real.
This is Mel's defense mechanism.
Do not take this seriously.
Zutara.
Yeah, don't take it seriously. This is just
because
this is all
for a while,
Mel.
Allie did, and she thought I shipped Zutara, and she was dumb because the things I say are dumb.
You know what? Just
okay.
Just,
and this is yeah, this is Mel's thing, and she and let's see what she came up with for hidden Zutara in The Legend of Korra.
If they suck, cut them out.
Don't cut
all
any
right,
out.
Here we go. I got four for you today. Hidden Zutara, number one. Korra can only bend fire, water, and earth. She is clearly neglecting air because she ships Zutara, and if the Avatar ships Zutara, then it's canon. Therefore, the paternity of Katara's children.
Wait, read that last part again. The paternity what?
Therefore, the paternity of Katara's first two children is questionable.
Ooh, interesting.
Okay,
second one.
Okay, number two. Hidden Zutara, number two. There is a practice yard for firebending in the South Pole. This is clearly placed there because Katara couldn't bear to be so far away from the Fire Nation and Zuko. Therefore, they secretly eloped after Aang died.
Somehow it became yours.
When she was like 70 years old.
Yeah, really?
Don't think about that.
Just number three.
Number three. Tenzin and Lin clearly have obvious romantic chemistry and are the Tang that never happened. This is clearly preparing us for the reveal that Zuko and Katara had a love child, and therefore Katara and Zuko have always loved each other.
What?
Oh,
that
God.
Was a reach.
That's such a reach.
Number four.
This
more of a hidden Tang than a hidden
This
Zutara.
One might be a reach as well. While it was confirmed that Aang is the father of Katara's children, it was never confirmed that they actually got married. I checked. Therefore, Katara never married Aang, and she loves Zuko, the end.
Ah, interesting. That gives you something
right
to think
then.
About now.
Oh, plus, like, she was... Me and Allie, look, she wasn't really wearing a different necklace.
Oh, yeah.
Other than her mother's.
Well, you missed that one.
Yeah, it's something to think about.
She's still wearing her mother's necklace.
Katara seems to be wearing the same necklace.
Mel, make one up on the
Either
spot.
Either that or Aang's just, or make whoever one up. Husband it is, just lazy. Wake one up now, go.
No, okay, that's fine. No. Okay, no, those were very good.
Katara loves her mommy more than Aang.
That's a whole other conflict. We're not.
My favorite part of these is the logical connections drawn between the facts and the stuff like that. Okay.
You mean logical fallacies?
Okay, facts.
It depends on your perspective. Yeah. Yes.
You know how hard it is
in the mind of a Zutarian.
So I guess we're looking for.
Oh, hey, Dylan. How do you pronounce Katang?
It is pronounced Katang. Thank you very much. I didn't say Katang today at all. Wow.
Oh my God.
Except for now.
Except for
Mina,
now.
Why did you tell him?
Mina, thank you. You saved this podcast by letting me say Katang.
You just killed everyone.
Why do you say it Katang? Because
I pronounced it first, so I get to say how it's pronounced.
There was one other thing I wanted to say.
Katang one time.
Yes, Mina?
I always think about the backgrounds in Crossroads of Destiny and how angry someone got about that on the podcast one time.
Martin,
yeah. And I wanted to point out that they were much better in this episode.
Interesting, yes. The backgrounds were. There's some beautiful backgrounds they've been releasing on Coronation.
UA Bay,
oh yeah.
Persabulous. What kind of word was that?
I didn't say
Sokka named the bay after UA, guys.
Yeah, Aang gave him one job to do.
Just name
and
something.
He did that.
And then he tried to paint
what?
It, failed miserably.
I'm going to let you name this bay because you're my friend. And he said, you know what? I'm naming it UA Bay because I like rhyme scheme. And that.
Or maybe he just looked at it and was like, you're a bay, but then he said it with a ghetto accent, like UA Bay.
Oh my God.
Thank you, Mina.
Okay, that wins worst joke of the night. And we, let's wrap things up. It's been pretty long. Ooh, now I get to record the time. Where we're at.
We'll talk about emails another time.
Oh, yeah, let's do that another time. So, I've been your main host, Dylan. Co-hosts have been Sam, Allie, Nina, and...
Ouch.
Mel. Okay, sorry. I was like, is there three or four people?
What the hell?
I always forget suspects. Someone. Yeah. Thank you, Mel, for outlining the episode.
You're
you get
welcome.
Credit in now. Technical director AJ Kevin. I feel like I've left someone out every single time we've been through the rotation.
There's a secret person here not speaking.
AJ no? Kevin, right. Musical remixes by Luke Tripp.
Oh my gosh.
I edit Dunk Fang hosted by Jake. So email us at dylan@dongbufang.net. We're going to try to have regular podcasts.
We are all Dylan.
Now for...
We are a collective of Dylan.
Yeah, if you want to get to me, email dylan@dongbufang.net. If you want to get to all the administrators at dongbufang, email webmaster@dongbufang.net.
None of us are administrators, by the way.
Yeah, so and I can forward stuff to...
You can't get to any of us.
To you guys, to the co-hosts if you want me to. Like, if you want to say Sam is awesome, like one email said that one time.
Aww.
Then you can, I'll forward it to Sam.
Nice of them.
Or if you want to say that I'm 6 years old.
What?
Let's not bring that up. That's an old reference.
She's I fully expect things about my voice on here. So.
Yes, everyone email about Mina, yes. I feel like there's something I was going to say at the end of the podcast.
Thanks for listening.
This podcast was strong.
What?
Okay, no, that's not what I was going to say.
Yo, Amon's mask has a mouth, but his mouth never moves, and that bugs me.
It's just a mouth bowl. It's typical.
Oh my god. Sam!
I was going to say something now.
Think on it. I'll entertain them while you think.
No, it's okay. We don't have to. It probably wasn't important. We forgot to rate the episode. Okay, out of 10, give me what you guys...
Over 9,000!
Stop it. Out of 10, Allie, go.
Don't. 9.
9? Mina, out of 10.
I'd give it an 8, and I think Jake would give it a 6.9.
Oh my god.
Mel, go.
I'm gonna say 8 as well.
Sam?
8.1.
Stop it.
Okay, and I'll give it about a 7.5.
What?
So, that's
critical.
That was the highest I was gonna go to.
Suck.
You suck.
So yeah, I'm hoping for the... Okay. Wow, very intelligent picker. I'm going to... we'll be introduced to two of the main characters next episode. We didn't even get to see them.
Bowling!
Oh my god.
They see me bowling.
They see me bowling in the
no,
deep.
No, okay, let's stop. and yeah, so...
Played it.
Send us email via Messenger Hawk, guys.
Yes, do that.
That's all I will accept.
yeah, that's it for the first episode. Like I said, we'll try to have regular podcasts. Look forward to episodes at 11 a.m. Wow, I'm gonna have to wake up. I'm gonna have to set an alarm for that. Okay.
They're on Saturdays, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
totally worth it.
Okay,
gotta stop getting down on Friday, guys.
It's Friday.
Stop it.
Please
no.
Stop. No. What are we ending on right now?
Strong.
It's Friday.
No, wait. We should end. What did she say?
You gotta deal with it.
No, that's
too long. Strong or
strong?
Strong. It's the new strong. Hope. Guys.
No one really gets that. By the way.
No,
she said it like 8 times.
Oh my god, do it!
Everything we was can... like better now, so she ran out of things to hope for because there's nothing to hope for. So strong.
Like okay. This baby is strong.
Do
the
it.
Abandoned
do
hope.
It.
Maybe
Please.
People will understand that. I have doubts that our listeners. Sure. Will
Let's just that. End on what you gotta deal with it. Then.
No, strong.
I don't know.
Okay, Allie.
So
okay,
funny.
Half of us are gonna
it's
end on.
It's strong, you gotta deal with it.
Okay, let's do that. Okay, 1, 2, 3. It's
strong. You gotta deal with it.
Yep.